That was Determinist Chant by Simon Kingston. Before that, it was I Know I'm Going to Die of a Stroke by Jim E. Brown, Sylvester and the Hot Band's version of Southern Man. And that's all I've got for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I had so much fun. I'll be here the rest of August, Tuesday 3 to 6. Take you out with one last song. Thank you so much. Oh, and by the way, excuse me, you are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Thanks again.
Walking on illusion. Whoa, 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 whoa. He's everything. Writes you songs to sing. Sparkle to shock to bling. You might be in awe by his stories of the Lord. But Grandma said it best. Don't you buy no wedding dress. And you'll never make an honest man out of him. No, no.
Is everyone doing out there? How do I sound? Do I sound okay? Talking to my engineer,
sound
David.
Great.
Sound great. Fabulous. I need the reassurance. Hello. Welcome to another episode of Between the Lines. This is a show for the detail-obsessed, the aesthetically inclined. Yes, it is a show about design. It is a show about fonts in particular. My name is Jackie, and I'm filling in today for Alan, the chef. He's usually on Tuesdays on the summer schedule. Unfortunately for him, fortunately for me, he is not doing so well. He is taking a break, but we hope he gets better soon. And so I'm going to be kind of completing out the summer schedule, and Between the Lines will be on in this time slot for the next 4 weeks for the rest of the summer schedule. So I can hear all of the collective cheers from the font aficionados, the designers, and all of the groans from the people who hate us. Too bad. Well, that being said, you know, since we have four scheduled shows together, I really wanted to kind of, you know, talk a little bit about design. Yes, we're going to be taking calls. Don't worry. But I wanted to, you know, present a topic and like maybe we talk a little bit, get a little educational. And I'm hoping that now that we've got a couple more shows going on soon, I can get some guests in here. You know, we can ask them some questions, get some typographers on the line. You know, maybe you're interested in fonts or design, but you don't know where to start. maybe you turn on the radio and you're like, huh, Fonts, never heard of them. Well, I really want this show to be, you know, a little peek behind the design curtain for all of our font noobs. How does that sound, David?
You know, that sounded great.
Oh,
and,
good.
And I did want to say that if people do like fonts, and they must if they like this show.
Ooh, I love a plug.
That, you
give
know,
it to
the
me.
The new LCD.
Yes.
Has,
I haven't looked at it
has
yet.
Has a plethora of fonts.
Actually, can I look at it? I want to like live react means. To it. Hold on. This is exciting. Is this out?
It is out.
Oh my gosh. This is so cool. I love someone reading on the air is like really good radio. I think that's great. Ooh, this is a studio copy. This is VIP. I feel like I'm going to grease this up with my nasty hands. This is so cool.
It's a first pressing.
Ooh, there's so much great art in here. You know what I loved about the first issue of LCD? Or not the first. It was like the first reissue that came out. There was just such great articles, such great art. And every single piece had a different font. It had a different style. You know, like, you know, some magazines, it's nice when it's all cohesive. It's like a different look. But I just feel like it's so FMU to have lots of different artists involved.
It's a great publication.
It really is. It really is. I do want to ask, because I did request to Ken that there wasn't a colophon in the last LCD. I don't know if you know what a colophon is.
I don't. Please educate.
It is basically a little thing, and it's kind of where the copyright goes on magazines, on books, and it says, like, you know, this book or magazine used this font set in this weight, and it's from, like, this designer. And so for all of us font nerds, we will sometimes, you know, be reading a magazine and then we scroll to like the back or the bottom. I love when I say scroll, like, oh, now I'm all digital. We flip to the front or the back and we're like, oh, who was that designed by? I must know. So I, you know, I don't know if he added it. I'm going to email him if he did.
Who, Ken?
Yeah, I gotta know. But yeah, this is looking really great. I'm really excited. We should do an entire show about magazines. I think that would be really cool. And we've got some cool stuff coming up. But, you know, I wanted to do something. You know, our last episode was about AI. I got a lot of complaints, I will say. People were like, I thought this was a show about fonts. You know, you can make fonts with AI. And I think that was an interesting topic. But that's okay.
We talked about that.
We did. I think I want to, let's take it all back. Let's make it something that people are interested in. And I think that I would love to do this topic today about album art and about music. You know, we talked about LCD, FMU. I'm assuming people like music. I mean, that's a very broad assumption being on this radio station. But I would love to talk about album art and, you know, what is an album cover that, you know, has the typography that perfectly matches the music inside. You know, is there music that you love, but the album art or the cover is just so bad, or like the font is so bad that you're like, I can't even look at Pet Sounds one more time. It's just, ugh. I mean, I like Pet Sounds, but that's a bad example. And then like maybe what's your favorite decade of album art? There's so many different, you know, genres, which I'm going to talk a little bit about before I give out the number. You know, these are just kind of side topic questions that you can bring up if you call in. Were you going to say something, David?
No. I love the topic, though.
Oh, good. Yeah. Again, I love compliments and reassurance, so I appreciate that.
I'll stroke your ego.
That's why you're here. Yay.
That's what I was brought in to do.
And we'll get guests here to just disagree with me, so that we'll have a nice dynamic, I think. So before we get into just like album art in general, I kind of want to just talk about album art through the decades and kind of how people perceived music and albums. Like if you start looking and researching about, you know, there's a lot of, you know, general things in art and design that became like these trends that then, you know, there was some one peak artist that blew up and then everyone's kind of copying. So you get these genres that feel like they look and sound the same. The music is the same. So then I don't know if it's like a catch 22 where the music is one thing and then that band looked some way. So then, you know, I'm sure there was like some, you know, corporate overlord that said it's gotta be spiky if it's a, you know, metal band.
Aren't there always corporate overlords?
There's always corporate overlords, as we know. But, you know, looking through a lot of different album art, you know, when you start looking at stuff from like the 40s and the 50s, like it's got a lot of this like playful block colors. It's really hand drawn. You can tell it's like this was made without a computer, obviously. You know, it's got that hand-drawn quality while still being, like, really beautiful. It's got that... It's not rough around the edges, like a grunge style, but it feels like it was made with block letters. Like, it was, you know, carved or drawn or silkscreened. I think that's just, like, a really fun, you know... I just feel like I see so much joy in the album covers from the 40s and 50s. I also really like that they're kind of very obvious what it is. So if you look at the album art, the font will be in kind of like a sing-song pattern, or they've got music notes all over it. And it's like, this is music, as if you wouldn't know, which I think is really fun. And it's like, this is not that it's the birth of the record. I mean, it is in that setting, it kind of is. But it's like introducing it to people is like, this is something to play and be played.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, like the Sinatra covers where...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's kind of when it's shaded around the edges.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. And it's got this, it just, everything feels like you're taking it from a stage design and putting it in an image. So it's like, if you think of a stage design and it's got that, that one solo like flood spotlight on the performer, and then doing that and playing with that, like, there's a lot of circles in 40s and 50s, you know? And I think, not that I think that's where it comes from, but I think it could have been inspired by that. It feels really, like, musical, I guess. Like, just very obviously musical. And then you get into, like, the 60s, where you get, like, again, you know, Pet Sounds and, like, Sgt. Pepper. And, like, you know, it's starting to get more, you know, experimental. You know, you're starting to get some of that, like, Jimi Hendrix, like, where we're getting a little psychedelic with the fonts, we're getting a little bubbly with things, we're taking those circles from the 40s and 50s and really, like, blowing them out, making
them
wavy.
Them on steroids.
We're putting them on steroids, yeah. So I think that like 60s is where it gets fun, and then I think the 70s, like, you start to get a little bit more, like, metaphysical, you know, with, like, Pink Floyd, and, you know, I think that there's a lot of whatever you're seeing on the image doesn't have to be the thing. It's just like representative of the thing.
Well,
you know,
you mentioned Pink Floyd, and that's such an iconic record cover, right?
I mean, absolutely. Well, you don't even have to say anything. Everyone's like, oh, prisms,
the band's, the
triangles.
The band's name isn't even on the cover.
No. And that's kind of the beauty of it. And I think that I was going to get to this like a little bit later. I feel like the album covers of like the 2010s capture a lot of the album covers of the 70s, where it's like you don't even have to mention the band's name. It's just like a color, or it's like, it doesn't, in that point, it's like, it doesn't matter, because it's like the internet's going to tell you what it is. But I think in the 70s, it's like more interesting, because it's like, oh, you would be in the know to know that was Pink Floyd, and then everyone in the know knew, and you were part of this like cool club, which I think is really fun.
They become iconic.
Exactly. And then, but then you've got the other side of that, where you've got like Rumors, where it's like really hand-drawn and really beautiful and really like kind of country gypsy mode, you know. So I mean, obviously I'm being very general about each decade, but I'm just kind of going through decades just to kind of trigger your mind. Yeah, whatever the word is, you know, to think about things before we get to the topic. But then we get to the 80s. Did you like 80s album covers, would you say, David?
Some,
yeah.
But, you know, some were atrocious.
I think 80s gets a bad rap, but, like, when you think about the good ones, like, I think of the Michael Jackson ones, you know, where it's, like, bad, and the fonts are so raw and fun, and, like, Purple Rain, you know? Like, it's still got that, and I think a lot of that, actually, if you think about what Purple Rain looks like, you know, the font, it kind of takes a little bit, or maybe it's more, it inspired that kind of metal sharpness, and it's, you know, jagged a little bit. Like, I think that's kind of fun too. And I think that you also can get a little bit more like the Pink Floyd, where you get like New Order, you know, and you get things that are more experimental and like European feeling.
But didn't you say not too long ago that the metal font, metal bands had like the best fonts?
I personally think so. So like, that's why not too long ago, like 10 minutes before we started the show, we were talking about band. That's another thing. Like, I think the birth of the band logo was really like the 70s and the 80s, you know, like you get Kiss, you get AC/DC, you get, you know,
That's an interesting point, because before that, it was, you know, it's not like they had a copyrighted logo.
No, no. Right? And when you think about, like, the where it arrived from with, like, the 50s and 60s, it could be a different font every single album. But then I think, actually, with the 80s, you get that corporatization a little bit of music, where it's like, you're a brand now, and you need to make merch. And I think that's where, you know, obviously Kiss did really well, as they wanted to be a brand. You know, that's their whole ethos is... You know, if we do that, we want money. Thank you.
I got my Kiss coffin already.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm jealous. They sold out before I could get to the store, the Kiss store. But I really still love, even though it's corporate and, you know, we're anti-corporation here. I love a brand font. I love that AC/DC has, you know, the little lightning bolt in the middle. I think that there's so much there. But then that continued into the 90s. Like, then you get Nirvana, you know, you have that kind of serif thin font. It's always in the yellow, you know, like, I think that there's Joy Division, you know, I think that has like a lot of
black and white.
Black and white, like, that t-shirt is everywhere, you know, like, you still have that branding, you know, NWA, like, then you start getting kind of more hip hop fonts and Run DMC, and, you know, they were using like this kind of stamp corporatization, you know, Run DMC font that, I think it might be Helvetica.
The block
one with the red underline. I'd have to relook at it and see what that is. And someone, please, you can call in and correct me. But I think it's like a very blocky font with the red. But it feels like it's turning corporate brand on its head by like the music is fighting against the logo, and I think that's really fun. So that's kind of, I mean, actually, I want to keep going. I want to keep going about decades. Then I'll give you the number. Then I was really thinking about after 80s, 90s, you get into the 2000s. And, like, when I think of 2000 music, I think of, like, pop princesses. You know, like, I think of, I mean, obviously, you think there's, like, stuff that, you know, maybe me and you listen to. But I think the thing that was in the mainstream is, like, the Britney Spears, the Christina Aguilera's, like, all the boy bands. And there's, like, this tech feel. Like, there's kind of this girliness with like a Twirls font on like a Britney Spears cover, and it was all about the face. Like, it's less about the fonts, which is where I think it's like less successful, but the ones where the fonts are really important, and it's got that like techie metal, like liquid metal drip. Like, I think
not like a surf guitar,
like a surf guitar. I think it was the Backstreet Boys that had like kind of this like metally drippy, you know, it's like, ooh, we're sexy. we're made of liquid metal. You know, I think it's like futuristic but fun and silly. And there's like a silliness to 2000s album covers with the font choices that I like, you know. And then I kind of already touched on this, but I think 2010s and like beyond, you know, to today, we're kind of going back to like that that 70s, like Pink Floyd, where it's like, everyone knows that this album's going to be on the internet. Like, you don't need to have like a title. So you look at like Kanye West albums, Frank Ocean, you know, It's Just Like a Color, or like, you know, certain things that are really arty and artful or like minimalist. I mean, I miss the fonts on some of those. But I think that that's kind of interesting. And it's hard to put a label on what's happening now. I think you need to be like for like a couple, like a decade or so removed to like really see what's happening. But that's kind of how I see things. It's like, it's not so based on like what you're reading and what you're hearing. It's just sort of like a beautiful image and a vibe, you know, and you'll buy it.
Do you think that has come about partly due to the resurgence of the popularity of vinyl?
I think so. Yeah, I think so, because I think that vinyl, I mean, people know that vinyl, it's more expensive to make than just like streaming something. And I think that they're putting the money into hiring a graphic designer. I mean, I hope so. Hiring a graphic designer, hiring, you know, a layout artist, like, you know, hiring a packaging designer, and even pressing the vinyl in like interesting things, like we're pressing this in blood, or we're putting like orange juice in this album. Like, there's a lot of gimmicks, but I think that it means that this was made by hands. And I think that that's, I mean, going back to our AI conversation, like things that are made by hands are going to be more precious to us because we're losing that, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I will finally give out the phone number, which is 201-209-9368. After all of that, we're talking about music, we're talking about fonts and music, we're talking about band logos, and, you know, we're talking about album covers. So I said a lot. I'm going to repeat the number. It's 201-209-9368. Please call in and, you know, tell me about an album you love. Tell me about a cover that you love. Tell me about a cover that you hate. Tell me about a decade of albums that you love. I just want to have that conversation. Do we have a call, David?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, no calls. You're welcome to call in.
We have a call.
Here we go. See, when I say no calls, then people call in. They're like, oh, me. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. I disagree with you about 60s type being experimental.
Really?
From what I just remember of that, I mean, not that I was there, but it was like this neo-art nouveau type of typeface that was used, on the Jimi Hendrix, on Are You Experienced, and a lot of the, even the psychedelic posters were kind of neo-art nouveau.
Oh, for sure, sure. But I think at the time, like, that did feel innovative. I mean, the fact that it was harder to read was the innovation. No?
I don't know. I just see it. Well, I was going to say that I see the 40s and the 50s being more Bauhaus influenced from the Bauhaus.
Definitely.
People going to Chicago.
Absolutely.
And
that's where you get those colors, you know, like you get those poppy, like red, blue. Yeah. Like they're only using three colors. And it's like, you know, I think that's certainly from like Bauhaus.
Yeah. And it's just a lot more modern. I mean, in a way, like I don't find the 60s stuff that modern.
Do you think that the 60s stuff, you know, because it is such a specific, like because it became such a trend, it's not as timeless? Like it's so stamped with a time period.
Maybe the thing that I'd say, I mean, it's kind of like how, like, granny dresses were a thing for hippies.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
it was sort of a back to nature, sort of reactionary.
I think so.
Thing.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's innovative, but I welcome all sorts of dissenting opinions. So thank you so much for your call.
Okay. Okay, bye.
All right, next caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Jackie. How are you? It's Franco.
Hi, Franco. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Do you have an album that you love or hate because of the cover?
Well, I love it, but it's a lot more than what I think.
Dive in,
Franco.
Last caller Let's go.
was talking about the 60s album style of the posters. Where
yeah, that like psychedelic Jimi Hendrix.
You know,
we all know it.
All that stuff.
Some
yeah,
of us
all
love
that
it.
Stuff. But I would elect for an album cover. I wouldn't even say it was groundbreaking, but it endured.
Okay.
And it was so unusual in the respect that it is still being referenced at this point. I mean, in a very small community. It's Oxo Moxoa by the Grateful Dead. And the cover was done by Rick Griffin, who was in that circle of poster artists in San Francisco. He was originally a surfer from L.A. who went up to San Francisco and basically sort of, after it was already in motion, joined. Well, he quickly became the singular artist that mm-hmm. defined it more than anybody else.
And his work is stunning. Like, to me, the detail in there is so beautiful. If you look, like, really closely at that album, you can see, like, every hand-drawn little dot in, you know, the lettering, in the I think it's like a sun. I'm not entirely, I think it's a sun. You know, in the skulls. Like, it's just so beautifully done. It's a great one. I think it's certainly iconic. And I don't know. I mean, to me, I think it's in the same vein as the Jimi Hendrix because it's creating, you know, an illegible, a somewhat illegible piece, and it's like the people who are in the know get it, and they get the general gist of the music, and they know they're gonna like it. Like you're in an in crowd a little bit. So yeah, that's a really great option. Thank you, Franco.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna add this.
Okay.
Last week I was gonna go to San Francisco, but then someone sort of alerted me to the fact that the Grateful Dead were having their 60th anniversary. And a cold chill just went down my spine because I realized there would be absolutely no place to park in the city. Well, one of the things I was doing, because I was packing, and I was watching KPIX, which is the CBS affiliate in San Francisco, and they showed what was going on 8th Street. And they went into this gallery, and they showed something that was just beyond mind-boggling. Someone had hand-carved a very deep three-dimensional copy of the album cover, and it was like about 8 feet by 8 feet square, and the news person said it weighed 800 pounds.
They carved the Grateful Dead
up there in a couple of weeks, it'll still be there.
They carved it out of rock?
Wood.
Oh, out of wood. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really complicated to carve. Well, I send me a picture of that. That sounds cool.
Yes, I definitely will. If it's still there.
Have a good one, Franco. Thank you.
I know.
All right. Call in 201-209-9368. We're talking about album art. We're talking about fonts that we love from bands, band logos. I think that, we definitely have talked a little bit about the 60s, but like maybe there's a cool 2000s album cover that you really love that you thought was like really amazing. And this is no fonts, but I remember when I got the Animal Collective Meriwether Post Pavilion album, and it's like it's kind of like a trippy trick of the eyes. It kind of made me think of that with the Grateful Dead and some of the other 60s stuff, where it's not about what you're reading, because there's nothing to read. All right, we have another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, I really really love this show.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So I didn't think I had something to add here, but I do now, just because Franco brought up the Grateful Dead. And I just want to add this idea to the conversation, which doesn't have to do directly with typefaces or typography, but it has to do with album cover design.
Sure.
And that is the stellar cartoonist Robert Crumb's unwilling introduction into the Grateful Dead's visual identity canon.
Absolutely.
So, as you probably know, as your well-versed designer...
Tell everyone.
Crumb did not care. Crumb did not want to be involved with the Grateful Dead. He invented this guy, whether it's Mr. Natural or the Walking Man or whatever you want to call him. And it sort of became part of the visual language, so much so that one of the most iconic album covers of all time, Grateful Dead Live 72, Europe 72, is a copy of R. Crumb's style. And so... here you have this sort of ultra-porous world of the late 60s, early 70s, where it was just possible for this man's entire... I don't think this could happen today necessarily. For his entire style and way of expressing himself as a very distinct cartoonist, this is R. Crumb, to be taken by the largest touring band of all time and turned into part of their identity. And so that's what I wanted to add to the conversation.
Did they pay him for all that?
No. They didn't have any money left over, man. They were break even. There was no EBITDA.
Classic.
It cost them $100 million to make $100 million.
Classic illustrator, classic graphic designer problems.
Of course.
Well, and thank you. Thank you so much for the call.
Retired in Provence. So
yeah.
Crumb, but,
good for him.
Okay. Well, love the show. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks for calling. All right. Hello. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Peter from Saranac Lake, New York. How you doing?
Hello, Peter from Saranac Lake, New York. How are you?
I'm doing all right. If you're talking about typefaces on album covers.
We are. Band logos, album covers. What do you got for the topic?
I like King Crimson, and I'm especially fascinated by the album art on Starless and Bible Black.
Is that the one with the face?
No,
am I thinking? That's not the one with the
album.
That's the first album. Okay.
And an iconic cover.
That cover is great with like the flared nostrils and the, it's a beautiful illustration. I mean, illustration and typography just go hand in hand on these album covers. But wait, yeah. What's the one you like?
And on that particular album, if you look at the cover, there's no printing anywhere on
no,
the cover.
No, there's not. It's so, just the face.
And the band wanted it that way. They wanted you to buy the album and open the album. It's one of those gatefold kind of albums, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But what's the one you liked?
Starless and Bible Black. I'm nowhere near an expert on type fonts.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. Interesting.
The cover is a serif of some kind.
Yeah, it looks like a stencil serif.
Right, and mm-hmm. then if you open the gatefold and look inside,
was it like a cutout?
Like, it's like Starless and Bible Black with different colors superimposed on top of one another. And
was the stencil like a cutout? Like, was it die cut into the first cover part, and then you'd like pull it out?
I am nowhere near enough of an expert to be able to answer that question.
I know. It's hard to tell on, like, the internet. I don't have it in my hands. Maybe someone can run and find it quickly for me. But, yeah, that looks cool. I kind of wish it was cut out. I mean, I wonder if anyone knows if it was cut out.
For what it's worth, from what I've read, King Crimson got some criticism because, unlike the Rolling Stones with the tongue or AC/DC, they never really had a standard logo.
You know what?
The life of the band.
That's exactly. You know, I think that makes them stand out, and maybe that's what, you know, they kind of, they're not like forgotten in history, but like whenever someone says, "Oh yeah, King Crimson," like I think that they're not as remembered because they don't have in that era that like iconic logo, like.
Yeah,
Rolling Stones or the Beatles or whoever. Yeah, they changed up their album art every single time and changed up their logo, which I respect. I mean, I think that's more fun. Who wants it to be the same thing every single time? A corporate band.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
What made you want to do a show about typefaces?
Well, I am a graphic designer. I work in advertising, and I love fonts, and I just kind of hoped other people love fonts, too. I mean, I wasn't totally sure. But I appreciate your call, and thank you so much.
Well, thanks a lot. Good show. Have a good night.
You too. Oh, dial tone. Missed him. I think we have another call. We're hooking him up. Hello, you're on the air.
Jackie, can't believe I got through.
Oh, David. Who is this?
Sorry,
it's Zachary.
It's Zachary from the Wabash. I apologize.
You don't need to apologize to me, Zachary. How are you doing?
Doing all right.
You got something for the topic, Zachary?
Oh, yeah, actually, I mean,
this is an easy one, right? We can all talk about this. This is easy.
Oh, there's so much.
So much.
It's really, there's two particular, for one tangent, the legal brushing up of albums. So you got the classic, which is coming up, PMRC Day, Parents Music Resource Council Day, the Senate hearing.
I don't know what you're saying. What is that?
Oh, you don't celebrate that? So they have you like metal art. So they actually had a slideshow during a Senate hearing back in 1985.
Are you talking about the Twisted Sister one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Tipper Gore.
Yeah,
Zappa
and
John
Tipper
Denver
Gore.
And, yeah,
yeah, yeah. That,
Tipper Gore's
that,
there.
I'm familiar. I'm familiar.
So if you started like 47 minutes in, C-SPAN's got the whole four-hour thing, nearly 5 hours. But they show a slideshow of metal album covers.
Okay.
Great ones are in there.
Yes.
And then also
and they turned
that,
it into a day? That's a day now?
Yeah, PMRC Day. You don't celebrate?
I didn't know I've never heard of PMRC Day.
Well.
Do you just play all of those albums in succession?
Oh, yeah. You can't take it. I mean, a lot of it's crap. But
you know, to be decided. Now I'm going to be a full celebrator of this day. I probably like all of those bands. But anyway, Zachary, for the topic, let's stay on topic. Can you name an album?
No, that's
that
part
you,
of it.
You know?
A particular one, I would say it's the Inner Sleeve, Dead Kennedys' Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
You know, just because of the court case with it, you know, the Geiger piece. And
yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. What makes you like that?
The like court. What? The fact that, like, it became, they were the first, I think, criminally charged.
Were they?
For album art. Yeah.
I didn't know that, that they were the first.
Yeah, like they took it all the way through, not just threats, not just like, oh, we're going to rough up your record store and take the albums or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you got to make it about money, I guess, you know. And now it's very funny because now you look at album art and you've got that, what is it, that explicit rated, you know. And now if you don't have that.
But that's from the PMRC.
That's from PMRC. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But now, like, I remember growing up, like, if your album didn't have that, it wasn't cool. Like, you had to have that. That was like, oh, this is going to be hardcore. I love
that. Wouldn't
that
be good if you had that filter at the library?
Yes.
You're like, don't show me any. I don't want to see anything that isn't offensive.
I want only offensive. I want the banned books. I want the banned records. Because, you know, that's where the good stuff is, you know? It's going to be the best.
What do you think of the Shriners on the front of the Frankenchrist album?
What do I think? I mean, well, there's no, like, fonts on this, so I don't have too many opinions. I try to keep my opinions really font-based.
What about the fonts on those logos on those flags?
But they're so small.
The album is big. It's 12 inches. You can read them.
I don't know. It's a little clear. I wouldn't say it's my favorite album cover of all time. You know?
Shriners? You know, you ever see them in those little cars?
I've been to parades. Yeah, I've seen them. But it's just not my favorite album cover. I don't know if it, like, relates to the music for me.
Oh, not a Dead Kennedys fan?
I mean, I love the Dead Kennedys. I just don't like this album cover. And actually, this is a really good example of I like the album, but I don't really care for the album. I think the album cover is just, I don't really like photo album covers as much.
Would you indulge me, Jackie, in the audience?
Sure.
How would you improve upon Frankenchrist?
I would make something more custom, something more illustrative. But I like things that are more handmade, and I don't gravitate towards photography as much. Like, I would draw all over this image, and I think that would be more interesting. Like, if you outlined it with scribble, and, like, it was kind of like, ah, you know, cross out all the faces. But I like something really aggro, you know?
Oh, so you want like, the anger trapped in it. And
tell me more. Yeah, I'm like, what's going on? I like that.
Well, who throws those album parties in Monty Hall?
I don't know.
They do that. Well, they'll decorate different album covers and stuff. It's like an art craft night.
I don't know. Oh, wait. I know you're talking about. Yeah, but I don't know those people. Well, thank you for the call, Zachary.
Crossover. Hey, pleasure. Thank you so much, Jackie.
All right. The phone number is 201-209-9368. We are not only talking about Dead Kennedys album covers. We can, but we are really talking about music and fonts around music and band logos and album covers. And welcome to the show. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air. Nope, gone. Or we hung up on them. I don't really know. David's engineering, so we don't know. Oh, do we have them back? All right. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I love the show, and I put on the chat that the albums that Roger Dean did for Yes were all really pretty amazing.
Ooh,
with the graphics that he did in terms of all the titling and everything was fantastic. But one of the earlier callers was talking about the poster art and the fonts on the poster art. A lot of that was Art Deco, but it was also coming out of the fin de siècle Belle Epoque, turn of the century stuff, like the old timey, it's kind of old timey posters. From
do you mean like that? Yeah. With the airbrush. Yeah. Like that kind of airbrush technique on all of those posters, those like post-war, during war posters. Definitely.
Well, this was more the fonts of it. There was a big being of an age where I knew of this, just saw this stuff and grew up with this. There was a lot of turn of the century stuff and, old early movies and silent films and stuff that just had a lot of influence on those posters too. A lot of the typefaces came out of that sort of idea too, I noticed. So
yeah, totally.
Speaking about that, that was something that I remember seeing.
Yeah, I think that all of that stuff informs. I mean, there's just the trend in graphics, and it affects movie posters, it affects album art, it affects magazines. Like, it's something that goes across all of design, I think. And that's where you get these trends of, like, 50s looks like this, 80s looks like this, a little bit But thank you for your call.
All right. Thank you.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. This is the Font Show.
It's the Font Show, Between the Lines. Got something for the topic?
Yeah, I was wondering if the host had any opinion about jazz album covers.
I love jazz album covers. I won't say I know a lot about jazz, but I love the covers. Anytime I'm in a record store and I pick something up, it tends to be a lot of jazz. Like, I just think they make really great jazz covers. Do you have something specific in mind?
Well, the thing that I like about jazz album covers is a lot of the time, especially the ones in the 60s, mm-hmm. 70s, is that the design of the album cover kind of would reflect the type of jazz in the,
totally.
In the album. So you'd have like, you know, like a bebop album, and it would be the word bebop would be kind of bebopping all over the album. And like the Miles Davis Women's Brew had mm-hmm. like a psychedelic kind of thing that kind of reflected the psychedelic fusion jazz that he was doing.
Yeah, totally.
Thelonious Monk Underground.
Yeah.
Also, maybe.
And they have such great art. Like, yeah, you mentioned Women's Brew. I feel like that was such a, it's such a different album cover for like a jazz cover. You know, it's like got, I don't know, it feels more modern, I think, which is really cool. But then the fonts are still really, I was kind of talking about that, like the 50s, 60s fonts being like more blocky. I think it still has that blockiness in the font, like that, the way like Miles Davis is written. It's very, I don't know, blocky Art Deco a little bit, kind of what we were talking about. It's got a lot of sharp letters, but everything is in its own little block square, which I think is really beautiful and really contrasts with the rest of the art in a really cool way. But then, you know, to your other point, like the those kind of jazzy album covers that you can kind of think of where it's shapes and music notes and it feels musical. Like we get that instantly, which is really cool.
I had another question, if you didn't mind.
I'll take it.
About black metal fonts.
I love, we were literally talking about black metal fonts. Yeah. Is there a specific black metal band that you like? Oh, did they hang up? I like black metal. And then you just hang up. I like that. Good for you.
I think they hung up.
Well, I mean, talking about metal, do we have another call?
Oh, we do right now.
Let's take the call and then we'll get back to black metal. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. My name is Martin, calling from Warwick, New York.
Hello, welcome.
Hi. So, you know, you started talking, and there was one album that kind of stuck out to me, but then I started thinking about the artist, and I think, you know, I don't know if you've mentioned him yet today, but Roger Dean. We can talk about Roger Dean. Remember the first Asia album?
Oh, okay. Very cool. That is such a specific style. Like, it's like futuristic, but futuristic from the 80s, which is kind of my favorite futurism, like Back to the Future and, you know, all of that Europe. And, you know, I just think that's really fun. And again, with that airbrush technique, like using the airbrush to paint the, you know, to get that smoothness. And then, same with, you know, the way that they wrote Asia or the way that the font is, it just feels really futuristic and like beveled in there, which is really cool.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that because I remember that album came out and just looking at the art, you know, I drew it on like a school book. It looked real nice. And
oh, really? That is such a great, you can so draw Asia on a school book. It's kind of like we were talking on another show, the millennial like S, you probably might not know David, but it's like you draw three lines and make like a pointy S. Asia was that for like the 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Sure. All right. Have a good night.
Have a good one. Oh, we have one more call. I was going to talk about black metal, but we'll take the call, David. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is the guy who called about the black metal.
Oh, great. Okay, well, let's have that conversation. I thought you were going to take it and then you hung up.
Water all over the place.
Oh, you spilled water. Yeah, that's so metal. I love it. So tell me, I was going to ask you, before you spilled water all over yourself, you have a cover that you really like, a specific metal cover or band?
Well, the iconic one is the Dark Throne one, where it's Dark Throne written in the spiky black metal thing. which has
I'm Googling it.
And then the screaming white face.
Yeah.
The death corpse paint in the corner. That's one of the best ones. But, it, you know.
It's so good. And the thing that's really cool about that. Black metal covers are so, what I like about that is it's taking the same idea of the like psychedelic fonts, but it's making, it's just, you take a font that is like curvy, it's, you know, kind of bubbly, it's a little soft, and we're just spiking it out. And just the making it spiky, it suddenly becomes aggressive and harsh. It's like it was, you know, forked, you know, it, I think that's really interesting. And this one in particular, looks like a spider web, which I'm assuming they were going for because it's like in the corner of the album, which I love. It's drippy. It's branch-like. That's a great... I mean, some of the best fonts, I think, are metal bands and black metal bands because it's got that spikiness. It's got that punch. And a lot of it came from German Gothic lettering. Like, they were looking at these kind of old books and kind of looking for something that felt really hard and felt really different for the time. And
yeah, the Venom cover is a lot like
the
that.
The Venom cover, yeah, that's the same. I think that that's where a lot of that comes from just in history is it comes from that, like, German, like, you know, if you open up an old book in Germany, they were using that black letter typeface all the time. And it was literally hand-drawn with, like, calligraphy pen, and that's how they made books back in the day. They didn't have TV or the, you know, TikTok, so they could time to draw.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. It was great. I'm really glad that you're going to be doing shows for the rest of the summer. It's very surprising, but it's very very happy.
I'm happy to surprise. Thank you for calling in. All right, the phone number is 201-209-9368. We are talking about fonts all summer long. I'm happy to surprise people and also happy to disappoint them. If they hate fonts and they hate this entire conversation, that's fine too. I think we have another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
I'm good. Hey, have something for the topic?
Yeah, so do you remember that old punk band called Econochrist?
No.
They had like amazing, kind of like what you were talking about with the black metal, like really spiky letters, and they were just that conversation really reminded me of it. They kind of, I feel like they were sort of like a really perfect example of squatter punk, kind of like death metal lettering.
Oh, cool! I think that the fun stuff about some of that lettering, you know. You get the, like, more corporate version of that with, like, Metallica. I mean, I wouldn't call them. I mean, whatever. They're mainstream, you know. But then get the more, like, hand-drawn version of that where it's, like, you see it on a poster. You see it on a zine. And it literally looks like it was scratched in and then, like, ripped off of a piece of paper and then scanned. You know, like, I think that it has just such a edge and such a handmade quality, which, you know, you all know I love. So... I'm liking the Econochrist. I feel like I would like this music. Like, just from looking at it, I gotta check this out.
Yeah, I mean, they were the perfect, like, Adesino Rio basement smashing your head
I
on
I see that. That's fun.
Like, band, you know? So, anyway.
Does Adesino Rio still exist? I miss them.
Yeah, right. There we go. And they were also, like, so their stuff was also rad for the patches. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, a nice big piece, and like you safety pin it onto your jean jacket.
I had
right?
that. Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. You're speaking my language.
Yeah. I'm glad I could help with the project.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you for calling in.
There.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air. You out there with the radio on.
Okay.
That's not, okay. They're not paying attention. They're so excited. They're enthralled, and then they're going to hear like a dial tone.
All right.
I was thinking a little bit about like just maybe that last caller gave me kind of like a trip, but you know, I was thinking about, you know, my first albums were CDs because I'm of that age. And you know, I really loved that kind of, again, that illustrative quality where there was like a fun illustrative element with the fonts. And I'm thinking of like the Green Day album, like Dookie, with like the explosion, and then the font kind of came in. And I think now Green Day has like this stamp logo, but like back then it was like, again, every album was kind of different. And same with, you know, I sadly had a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers albums, which now I'm like, ugh. But I like that kind of stamp logo, and they had you know, some like more scratchy.
Do you remember their first album cover? Wasn't it in 3D?
Yes. Yeah. Was it in 3D?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Now I'm like, what? Now what was their first album again? Oh, yeah. That's what I was thinking. It has like the big monster with the eye, and then it's like scratched in, right? Was that their first one?
I think so.
Or was it the one with the tongues? No, I don't remember.
No, it wasn't the one with the tongues.
They're so goofy. Well, the phone number is 201-209-9368. We're talking about fonts and album covers. We're talking about, you know, is there a band logo that you love? Is there a band logo that you hate? Is there an album that you love the music and hate the design? Call in and tell me. And I believe we have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Man, I'm the Iconochrist guy. I'm calling back.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
You're like, I have more things to say.
This is such a good show. You were just talking. I was listening. And Rob Rostock, right? Like, skateboard.
Yeah.
The Rob Rostock skateboard graphics with, like, the hands, like, ripping through the graphics on the skateboard kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the
illustration part of it. Like, it for me was synonymous with like that era and punk and skateboard, and it's like really fun and it's kind of disgusting. You know, it's got like a, sometimes it has like a Goosebumps feel. Like I just think that there's a whole genre around that.
It's like Garbage Pail Kids before
yes.
there were Garbage Pail Kids.
Yes.
Thing, which is really Robert Crumb.
It right? is. I think it does. I think it's very inspired by Crumb, for sure.
Yeah, which is kind of funny that it's like, okay, then all of a sudden you jump into, like, the world of fine art, end quote. You know what I mean? It's kind of a cool pathway.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I love that you've called in three times now, or is this the second time?
It's number two. I'm not going to call again.
You're fine. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Is it the Iconochrist guy again?
I'm sorry? Can you hear
me? Never mind.
Can you hear me?
Hello, no, yes, no. I can hear you.
So, three things. One, we were talking about black metal.
Yes.
Other genres of metal have kind of taken in and made it an arms race, too. Modern example is a band like Blood Incantation, where you can't even read what it says anymore. But that's kind of like the point.
And it's like kind of like, it's kind of like IPAs. Like, how gross can we make this beer before?
Yeah.
You know, like, how illegible can we be?
Like, yeah, the smudge just becomes the band's logo.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
It's just going to be just then, like a slash, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
I like
and
that.
Two. Perfect album cover, I think, is System of a Down's Toxicity.
Oh, like, really?
Toxicity, like the Hollywood Toxicity sign. I think it's like, it sets the theme of the album perfectly. It's got, it shows immediately, like, this is about American consumerism being a problem and American media.
And like Hollywood,
and
yeah.
Immediately.
You get it right away.
So, like, you get it right away,
mm-hmm.
and it's, like, really iconic now, too. So I think that's a great mix of all of it. And then last, genre themes for album covers. Specifically, I think it's really evident in, like, 80s Japanese city pop, right? Every album cover from that genre kind of has, like, the same colors and themes and, like, swoopy fonts and stuff, and I think it's cool how the whole genre, the albums, like, the style of the album evokes the music, almost.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole beauty. If, like, if you're a designer, and I think a lot of designers have designed album covers, CD covers, it's kind of the most fun part of design to me. Like, you get to take music and interpret it and make something that makes people want to buy it. Like, it is the purest form of design, and it is the most fun. But yeah, like that, I just looked up the 80s Japanese, and I totally know what you mean. Like, it's got these poppy, bright blues and colors, and it feels really informed by just Japanese art, like, in the history. Like, it's, yeah, it's got, like, almost like that. It's taking airbrush with, like, a watercolor effect. I think it's really interesting. So yeah, I'm going to have to check more on this out. This looks cool.
City Pop is so upbeat. Right?
Yeah.
It's so upbeat and so, like, positive. And
it's
like
a little like Miami Vice, you know? It kind of looks like that, much. Which I think is really fun. That's probably, like, what they were looking at, you know? So I think that's really cool.
For sure. You can tell where it came from, and, like, you can also tell what it's trying to, like, evoke, which
definitely.
I think is really neat.
There's a lot of references there. Job. Absolutely. Thank you for your call. We have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I called in before to draw the parallel between R. Crumb and Grateful Dead.
Yes. Do you want to regret
probably,
that?
I'm
or
probably call in. I'm going to probably call in all the time because the show is. I'm a designer in the show.
Oh, great!
I can't stop thinking about the show. My name is Wilson. I live in New Jersey.
Hi, Wilson in New Jersey.
Hello. Love the show. Love the energy. I want to just switch gears and say, Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet.
Yes. Fantastic.
Such an impactful album cover for so many reasons. It takes us all the way back to Gaia, the original Impact, Earth tilted on its axis. Changing the world. It was my first album that I ever owned. I bought it in Washington, D.C. in 1988 in a mall.
Wow. Well, I have a funny story with Public Enemy. Well, I don't have a funny story. My husband has a funny story where his dad loved Public Enemy, and he had lots and lots of Public Enemy albums and tapes. And then a bully made him trade his Public Enemy tapes for, I think it was Guns N' Roses, and he was really, really sad, and now hates Guns N' Roses to this day. So
that's too bad, because
I
know some redeeming qualities for those. The contemporaneous albums, GNR and PE, are actually pretty good.
I know. I like both bands, but Public Enemy has such a great iconic look, and again, a band with a strong logo. It's got that stencil typeface.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
Their logo is lockstep with their identity.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they have that. Did they do the little, like, the little target, I think,
yes,
is really great.
Exactly, because they all have it, yes, 100%, they did the target, and they did the sort of the stencil prison.
And the colors, the yellow, the green, and the red, like, there's so much in there, and there's so much meaning for such a smart, you know, amazing, you know, group that it's really
I had to buy that. I had to buy that album again.
Oh, good.
I wore it out. Anyway,
yeah,
I love the
that.
Show, and I will bother you sometimes, but I will always be brief. Thank you.
You can always bother me, but please be brief. Thank you so much. I think, do we have time to take another call?
We have about 4 minutes left, that is enough.
We do
time.
Have time, yeah. Unless they're long-winded.
Right.
The number is 201-209-9368. We're talking about album covers. We're talking about fonts and band fonts. Is there an album cover? I don't think anyone's really answered this question, but is there a song or a band with music that you love, but you hate their album art? Can you think of anything, David?
I'm thinking.
Thinking. How about Micah just walked in? I'll pose that question to you, Micah.
I'm sorry. What was
is
the question?
There? Micah wasn't listening. Micah doesn't listen. Is there an album that you hate the cover art, but love the music? Oh, we're moving the mic. We're getting an answer. He's thinking.
You caught me
off guard.
Spontaneous.
Improv.
I can't think right now.
That's okay. You can email me later.
Yeah.
Or if there's an album that you love the album cover but hate, or no, the opposite.
So we have 3 minutes and we have two calls.
Let's get a caller on the air. Why not? Nope.
There we go.
Let's get the next caller on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show. Have something for the topic?
I was just thinking about the Public Enemy album, or the logo art.
Yeah.
And back when I was even younger than first hearing Public Enemy, probably, 89, maybe, 88, the Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, DRI, they're like a speed metal band in California. Love their logo, and that got me into them.
I'm looking up their logo to jog my memory. Oh, they have, okay. I've seen this. Yeah, I like the logo that is like scratched more than I like the stencil one, I think. But do you, I mean, you're probably a bigger fan. Do they use the scratchy one or do they use the stencil-y one? It also looks like they have a basic one, too.
The stencil-y one.
The stencil-y one. Yeah. I also like this human that is kind of like a bathroom guy who's running.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
That really caught my eye.
How does that relate to the music for you?
Back then, but
like, how does the guy relate to the music? Is he like dancing or running?
I think he's angrily moshing.
Angrily moshing. He does. You know what? You're probably right. He probably is. That is how I look when I angrily mosh. Well, thank you so much for your call. Oh, what are you saying, David?
Yeah,
the show's over. Oh, you want to do another call?
They're on air.
Okay, well, they're on air. Hello, you're on the air. Yeah, you have 30 seconds.
Okay, the album, I love the music. I absolutely hate the album cover. It's The Velvet Underground.
Oh, the banana?
Live. The 1969 Live is the green one with the woman's clothes don't fit from behind.
Yes. I don't. Which
you
one is that?
It's
like the backside of a woman walking up the subway or something with the smoke kind of coming around.
Oh, wait. You hate. Yeah. You love the album cover and you hate the music.
I hate the album cover.
Oh, you hate the album cover and love.
I wanted people to see that I had it.
Album cover would you want to see on there? More bananas, I think.
I don't know. Just anything. Let's just make it all green.
Yeah, 20
seconds.
I just
don't like that picture.
Well, David's wrapping us up, so I'm going to hang up. But thank you so much for that. And thank you all so much for joining. I'm really excited to be here next week. Hopefully, Michael will have an answer for us next week. I'm going to read the legal ID. You've been listening to Between the Lines with Jackie and on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM online at WFMU.org.